Good afternoon to those brave and strong enough to still be here. I was thinking about how the first time I ever was at the National Immunization Conference, my daughter was with me and she was 4 weeks old and she was breastfeeding in the back row with me. And now she just finished her first year of college. Long time. In the list of disclaimers, the findings and conclusions in this report are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position of the CDC. The Monroe County School Kids Influenza Prevention Program, or MICSKIP, is what I'll be talking about today. And I'm going to focus on obtaining parental consent because that's the part of the project that I have the most information on. This is a kind of information-heavy presentation, and a lot of times I'm going to be giving you teasers because we don't have all of the information yet. You see here also the list of co-authors, and I thank everyone, many of whom are here. So background and objectives. MICSKIP is one of the two CDC projects presented here today focused on elementary school influenza vaccination. The point of these two projects is to look at the feasibility, acceptability, and effectiveness of real-world school-located influenza vaccination, meaning that our funder was not a manufacturer. The vaccinator had to be paid in the way that they would if there was no funder, and that CDC's funding was mostly around the evaluation part. Today we're going to present some early results on different communication plans and how these affected parental consent and vaccination rates in schools. We'll have future analysis where we'll look at vaccination within the schools that we know about, and using the New York State Immunization Information System, or our New York State Registry, we'll be able to look at vaccination that happened both inside and outside of the schools. So we'll know more about, did we not only vaccinate kids in school, but we might have also increased vaccination just by keep talking about vaccination. We started with agreements. We started by finding a mass vaccinator who was willing to participate. This was part of the project that may not have happened at all because there's quite a bit of financial risk when you think about it. In any year, parents may totally reject flu vaccination, and so they have to order vaccine far in advance. And so it could have been that the mass vaccinator was left holding a great deal of pediatric vaccine without anyone to give it to. So it took some courage for the mass vaccinator to agree to participate. And then the payers, New York State Department of Health and New York State Medicaid, gave special permission to the mass vaccinator to provide VFC vaccine and to bill an administration fee, another huge leap in the process. We also had local insurers who accepted billing from the mass vaccinator for vaccination of school children in schools. And then the next group of agreements was with the schools themselves. We got 7 school districts to agree to participate. In our project, one piece of it was that we wanted to randomize different school districts to different communication plans. So they not only needed to agree to be willing to vaccinate in school, but they also needed to agree to let some of the schools be control schools. That is, that there would be no vaccination in schools, but we would still be calling parents to find out about vaccination after the fact. So this communication plan. You saw that some schools were randomized to high-level communication and some to low-intensity communication. So the low-intensity communication and the high started out the same way. In June, before the vaccination season, In the report card, parents in both low and high received an introductory letter, a backpack flyer, and, you know, when I say backpack flyer, it was the same flyer that we used later in the backpacks, but it was a discussion of influenza, and then a flu vaccine sheet. So information about McSkip itself and information about flu well in advance of the program. We put it in the report card so that we knew it would actually land in the hands of parents, as opposed to the backpack, which was sometimes a toss-up. In August, then, we mailed something both to low-intensity communication and high-intensity communication families. The low-intensity families simply got a reminder postcard. The high-intensity families got a reminder letter and an age-appropriate activity book, Activity for a Child, focused on influenza prevention. So again, keeping that flu message in front of them even in the summer. Then in September, in the backpacks of children, there was a cover sheet reminding them about the program, a blank consent form, the VIS, two VISs actually, because it was both nasal spray and injectable, flu fact sheets, and clinic dates, according to the school. Now, one of the things that I'm a big believer in Murphy's Law, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And one of the things that went wrong was that the consent form, the contract with someone to translate that to Spanish, that contract fell through at the last minute, and so it went out only in English. Then, in October, that same backpack kit went out, but this time only to the high-intensity communication parents. Then finally, in October and November, the schools in the high-intensity group had autodialer notices sent to about that the consent date was coming up. Remember to bring your consent form in. The consent due date is nearing. And then in October to remind them that the clinic date itself was nearing. So then after that, all that communication, we gathered the consent forms. And kids came into three status, consent status. Either there was no consent filled out, a complete consent with all the information that we needed was filled out, or incomplete. And some of the items were more important than others. For example, if you didn't have the subscriber name, the insurance subscriber name, we were still able to figure out who by the insurance number, you could still figure out who the insurance company was. But if you didn't have the person's date of birth, it'd be really hard to figure out one Johnny Jones from another Johnny Jones. So with all of the incomplete consent forms, McSkip staff tried to contact families or contact the school one way or another to get it completed. Some schools, and this was rare and only happened in suburban, some of the schools did a great deal more work in helping us complete those than others. Okay, now the schools themselves. We had both suburban schools and urban schools. You see the number of schools randomized to each arm of the study, the number of kids in those schools, the percent white, and in our community, the percent white is much higher in suburban schools than urban schools. You'll see that there's not a perfect randomization because the numbers of schools are so low. So, for example, the high-intensity schools, the high-intensity communication schools, had a lower percent white than the low-intensity suburban schools. And then in the last column, you see the percent with free lunch, free or reduced cost lunch, which is tends to be low in suburban schools and high in city schools. All right, so here's what we found. The consent status by location and intervention is shown here. You see for, we'll start with the first line, suburban high-intensity schools. I want you to remember that the blue part is no consent, pink stands for complete consent, and the tan is incomplete consent. So blue is no consent is bad. You see that for suburban schools, the high-intensity schools, we got about 75% were not consented at all, and 83% were not consented at all. So it looks like this, and from some from early statistical analysis, that these two were statistically different. Now, if you think about stuffing thousands of backpack forms into envelopes and mailing them out, what's statistically significant and what's clinically significant for that much work may be two different things. But they are statistically different. Similarly, for urban schools, the high intensity percent with no consent was lower than urban low intensity consent. One of the things that we heard after the fact in the focus groups was that people believed that there was more parental resistance among the very young children than among older children. But our consent status analysis doesn't bear that out. If you look here at suburban schools above the orange line, you see grades K through 2, the no consent was 78%, and the suburban 3 and up was 79%, so about the same. Similarly, in urban schools, 77 for K through 2, and urban 3 and up, 80%. So not huge differences. So that was one of the things that the focus groups, the people in the focus groups were saying that hasn't been borne out. All right, so you have this consent in hand now. Will those kids on the day of vaccination actually show up for vaccination? In suburban schools, K through 2, if you had a completed consent form, your likelihood of getting a vaccination through McSkip was 88%. If you were in grade 3 and up, similarly 88%. In urban schools, if you had a completed consent, K through 2, it was 74, and grades 3 and up, it was 72. So quite a bit lower. We believe that this was largely due to differences in absenteeism in the two places. There may have been some differences in organization. We heard about one school, a suburban school, for example, where the parent group got very involved with McSkip. They ended up making after, I forget what they call them, boo-boo bunnies, where after you got your vaccine, you got a little washcloth with an ice cube in it, and it was tied and had eyes on it, so it looked like a bunny rabbit. So, I mean, in some suburban schools, they were way organized. All right. Then what about the schools where if the parent had initially sent us an incomplete consent form, how good were we at, or how good did it work out to get those kids vaccinated? You see the numbers there. And again, much better in suburban schools than in urban. Now I'm going to have you switch your thinking, instead of just the consent process, but the percent of the school that ended up vaccinated only through McSkip. This doesn't look at vaccination both at McSkip and the medical home, only through McSkip. You see here in blue the bars for people who came into the process with completed consents, and in pink people who came into the process with an incomplete consent. On your left is suburban and on your right is urban. And you see the percent vaccinated through mixed skip was greater in suburban high-intensity communication than suburban low-intensity communication, on down. I also want you to note that the scale here starts with 18. I don't want you to think that I'm being disingenuous, trying to make you think that the top number is 100%. That would have been much better than we did. All right, here the top number is 25%, and in this analysis, we take out any school or any pre-K kids. And the blue this time are kids in K through 2, and in the reddish is a 3 and up. Again, this is the percent vaccinated through mixed skip, suburban and urban. So again, that comment about that the older kids were going to be much more into mixed skip, that is not what happened. And then finally, just as a little tickler, we started to think about, well, what percent of the whole community got seasonal flu vaccine? And I should have said that at the beginning. This was only about seasonal flu vaccine through mixed skip. So this pie shows us out of the almost 22,000 children in our community, 8% were vaccinated through mixed skip, and 4 were through a related after-school program. The vendor was kind enough to also have an after-school program that wasn't part of mixed skip proper. We had many issues along the way. Not all the schools were approached to be involved. Not all the schools that were approached to be involved were willing to be involved. And not all of the schools within any district were part of mixed skip. We really needed, in the first year, the vendor very much wanted to limit his vaccine ordering and his risk. And so the limited numbers of schools also made it so that we had a limited community impact. It also made it so that our communication approaches had to be limited. A lot of people said to us, why didn't you put this on the television and newspaper? And we were worried that if within one district, some of the schools were getting clinic, you know, an in-school clinic, and some weren't, that putting it on the news was going to make it so that there would be unhappiness. And what makes parents unhappy makes the health department unhappy. Delayed vaccine delivery. I don't even have to go into this with the people in this room. There were clinics where the limited number of vaccine doses made it so that our plans couldn't be completely fulfilled. Plans had to be altered. The Medicaid billing issue, we worry that in future years, Medicaid may not allow this sort of arrangement again, which would put a kibosh on it. The consent form issues, I mentioned that the consent form only went out in English this year. The other thing about the consent form was that the Department of Health didn't have control of the consent form, so we couldn't make it the way we wanted. The consent form was owned by the vendor, and so the vendor wanted to have it the consent form to be something that could be used for adults and children, one size fits all. The unique individual school districts and schools varied in their demands on us, their needs, and their abilities. As I have mentioned, we went all from boo-boo bunnies to almost open hostility. Our study also had limitations. The pie chart that I showed you with the number of children who were vaccinated in all of Monroe County, we don't have complete NICIS data yet because there's some time lag from the time that a provider puts in their immunization information to the time that we can get it off of NICIS. And of course, there's some office non-compliance. You know, the provider may not be still, although there's fewer and fewer of those, there's still some office non-compliance with the registry. The generalizability can be questioned. This is one community, one flu season, and of course, it was the H1N1 season, and so that made everything different. And it was year one of a program. We of course, wonder if year two would be different. Randomizing by school, you saw that the randomization wasn't perfect. The schools weren't exactly the same. There was no blinding. A school knew whether they were, there was no way to hide it if you were getting autodialer reminders or not, although none of the schools were interested in our overarching research plan. The high and low intensity communication was different in more than one way. As you saw, we both had some additional backpack reminders, and we had two autodialers, so which part of that was the part that made it better? I can't tell you, and we'll never be able to pick that apart. So in conclusions, school-located influenza vaccination may have somewhat lessened the burden of vaccination on primary care offices. And in retrospect, I chose the word burdened, but that was actually another issue, was that we had some pushback from suburban offices that said, we don't want all of the schools in this part of the suburb to get McSkip, because that might really lessen the number of kids that come to the office. So while we were thinking that we were doing them a favor by lessening their burden, there was some schizophrenia about that. And for major impact on community rates, more schools would have to be involved. School autodialers were used at no added cost. We were surprised at how easy and hitchless that was. So that may be part of a consent completion program that would be low cost and may actually be the part that worked. Efforts to enhance completion of consents are needed, particularly in urban schools. Our next step, analysis of surveys and focus groups done with parents, teachers, and nurses, get the complete NICES data to compare vaccination rates, both the low, the high, versus the control schools. So we'll know, were vaccination rates higher in McSkip schools overall, not just through McSkip vaccination itself, and did McSkip increase use of the medical home? And then finally, of course, the economic analysis to see what did it cost per child from a group of different perspectives. I want to just thank some of the people that were not in the author list for their help in all of this, and thank you for your attention.